My name is Mike Elgin, and this is my Food and Technology Podcast number 19. My guest this week is robotic pizza tycoon Julia Collins. Here comes the Fatcast. Silicon Valley's Zoom Pizza can deliver in 5 minutes because artificial intelligence predicts your order, robots make the pizza, and automated ovens inside the truck bake it just before delivery. Here's my conversation with Zoom co-founder and co-CEO, Julia Collins. First of all, Julia, I'd like to thank you for coming on the Fatcast. Now, you're the co-founder and CEO of Zoom Pizza. So Zoom is spelled Z-U-M-E. What's different about Zoom Pizza?
What's different about Zoom Pizza? So there are two core pieces of technology that make Zoom different than any other pizza company or any other food delivery company. The first is this idea that we cook food while it's in motion. We call this technology cooking en route, and we actually have a patent for this technology, and it covers cooking any food while it's en route.
The patent is for just the general idea of cooking en route?
That's right. It's a systems and methods patent.
Wow.
And that's why it took 4 years, $250,000, 7 office actions, 3 supervisory escalations, and practically, you know, having to sue the PTO before we were finally awarded the patent in March of 2016.
That's amazing. And so since you've already mentioned the cooking en route, can you describe the trucks and the ovens and exactly what's happening in the trucks?
I can. So the truck itself is not tremendously unique. It is essentially a FedEx box truck. What's different about the truck is what's inside. So on the truck, you have 50 kilowatts of power that provide power to 56 mobile ovens. Each of those ovens has an oven control board, a little computer on the back. And that computer is constantly talking to the computer that is what we call the truck computer. And in that communication, what's essentially being transmitted is information about when the ovens should turn on and how long they should cook for. The when they should turn on is a function of GPS, but also drive time locations. And because what we want to do is cook your pizza when we're just about 4.5 minutes away from your house, so that the pizza cooks and is ejected just at the moment that we pull up to your door.
And this is automated. So what you're saying is that when the GPS detects that you're 4.5 minutes away from somebody's house, that oven, without any intervention from the driver, fires up and cooks the pizza.
That's almost exactly it. The only difference is it's not just GPS, it's GPS and drive time, because GPS alone wouldn't give us the best prediction of 4 minutes. We need to be 4 minutes, not like 4 miles. So yes, that's exactly right. No intervention from the driver. The oven is controlled automatically, but it's not just GPS that we use, it's GPS and also drive time.
Fantastic. Now these pizzas are partially baked back at the headquarters in the kitchen. Is that correct?
That's correct. The pizzas are cooked for 90 seconds in an 800 degree oven, and that allows them to be cooked from a chemical standpoint so that they're food safe and can be out of refrigeration, but they aren't finished cooking until they cook on the delivery truck.
And that also, I would imagine, would be required because pizza dough is a pretty flimsy, structurally flimsy. It'd be very difficult to handle a raw pizza on raw pizza dough, wouldn't it?
That's exactly right. Once the pizzas get that initial bake, they have enough rigidity to be able to survive travel.
Okay, so let's talk about the robots in the kitchen. You call it a cobot workforce where people and robots work together to make the pizzas. Can you run me through the initial making of the pizza?
Sure. So it's important to remember that Zoom is a food company first, and we're very serious about our pizza, and we're especially serious about our sourcing. So we have a commissary kitchen because that's where all of the scratch cooking happens. That's where our dough is made and aged for 48 hours. That's where our sauce is made, where our, you know, sausage is made, where all of our fresh ingredients are prepared. So, you know, about a quarter of the kitchen looks like a classic kitchen. The other 75% of the kitchen looks nothing like anything you've ever seen in a food service context before, because we have a robot-enabled pizza assembly line. And the robots that we use are general purpose robots, things like a 6-axis robot that you see in a lot of pallet stacking operations, or a flex picking robot that you've seen to do pick and pack. So these are general purpose robots that come from ABB, which you're probably familiar. They're one of the world's largest global manufacturers of general purpose robots. And so that part of the kitchen is allowing us to make pizza faster, make it more consistently, and make it without introducing these points in the system where humans are often prone to injury or to strain from repetitive motion.
So as I understand it, so there's a robot that puts the tomato sauce on, and there's another different robot that puts the pizza in the oven. What the robots don't do is they don't make the dough, press the dough, put the toppings on, or slice the pizza. Are you hoping or planning to put those operations under the control of robots at some point?
Yeah, we already have a pizza cutting robot that is that's been NSF certified that we've filed a patent for. We call him Leonardo. And this is a pneumatic robot that cuts the pizza into 8 perfectly even slices. So if you were to come and visit our facility today, you'd be able to see Leonardo in action. So the cutting, yes, has been automated. The topping and the cheese robot, there are going to be two separate cells. Those are in development right now, and we expect them to be installed in the first quarter of 2017. And then the dough press is an automated step, but we're not using a robot for that one. We're using a good old-fashioned machine that's made by our friends at AM Manufacturing in Illinois. And it's a dough press, but it's quite powerful, and it allows us to get the dough open consistently without it shrinking back like you see with a lot of sort of conventional dough presses. So the answer is yes, we're automating dough press. Yes, we're automating cheese and toppings. And yes, we're automating cutting as well.
So robots are doing cheese and toppings operationally today, or is that something you're working on for the future?
In March of 2017, you'll see those two cells installed. Right now, we're in research and development with those.
So we're in the middle of a enormously profound revolution of artificial intelligence. I've been writing a lot about artificial intelligence these days because it's showing up everywhere. You're using artificial intelligence. Can you talk about how you're using AI?
Yeah, the most important place where we're using AI is in our forward deployment program. So pizza eaters are incredibly habitual. And what you'll find is people tend to order the same type of pizza on the same day of week, or at least there are patterns that you can follow to predict what pizzas people are going to order. And so our system is designed to be able to leverage AI to predict what pizzas people are going to order, when they're going to order, where they're going to order, preload those pizzas into our delivery vehicles, and then go out and touch those customers. And that allows us to drive our delivery times down pretty dramatically. In some cases, Zoom has been able to get pizza to our customers from the food delivery truck in as little as 5 minutes using that prediction.
That's phenomenal. Because so, for example, I'm at home, I decide I'm hungry. I go to your website, I order off your menu, I pick the Sergeant Pepperoni pizza from your menu. And you might have, if you have predicted it, if your AI has predicted that I wanted that, that pizza has already been par-baked. It's already in the truck. The truck is already rolling. And if it fits into the route that the truck driver just heads for my house, the ovens fire up, and I could have that pizza within 5 minutes. That's what you're telling me?
That is exact. You nailed it right on the head. That is exactly right. The only one interesting surprise that we're unveiling shortly is that in addition to the forward deployment, we're also going to be doing some short run deliveries using scooters that rally onto the larger delivery vehicles. And so even if we have two customers, you know, that we need to satisfy, one can be served by a scooter and the other can be served by the truck. So we're able to sort of further optimize our delivery routes in a way that people typically haven't been able to do before. It's essentially as if I could split up, it's essentially as if I'm creating multiple commissaries with these food trucks.
What does commissary mean exactly when you talk about a commissary kitchen?
In the context of Zoom, our commissary is a central production facility where we receive fresh ingredients, prepare them, and then send them out to the point of sale, to send them out to where the customer is going to actually make the purchase, as opposed to a retail cooking facility where I have a storefront and some seating and a register.
I see. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. It seems to me that where you, I like to follow the trend line sometimes and see where things are going and it seems like where you're going is what I'm imagining, actually, is a big truck. And on one side of the truck is a bunch of ovens. And on the other side of the truck is a bunch of refrigerated ingredients and some more robots. And on the truck, the whole truck is the only commissary where all the pizza is actually made entirely by robots on a truck en route. Is that something that you believe you're going to be able to get toward, or is that even a goal?
We could get toward that, but that has some drawbacks. What we're more inspired by is the first half of your equation, which is right. Maybe only half of the truck has our pizza ovens on it. But what if the other half of the truck had a salad robot made by our friends at some innovative salad company, and a frozen yogurt robot made by our friends at Frobot, and, you know, a stir-fry robot? So rather than sort of like taking the commissary and putting it on the road, what's more likely is that we'll use that additional square footage in the truck to assort different types of food so that we can distribute them to customers. Because what we want is for people to have great food at their home that's a fair price without any chemical additives, you know, that are unnecessary. And you can only do that, you know, when you're cooking food just at the moment that it's being served. So we'd rather actually use that square footage in the truck to create a wider array of items to sell.
You're 2 minutes away from the Googleplex in Mountain View, I understand. How much of your business comes from Google employees?
You know, we've got a lot of Google employees. The one mistake that we did make, and what we wished we had done in retrospect, was to prioritize the development of a native Android app. We went really hard on iOS right out of the gate, and we're right in Google's backyard. So I imagine that once our Android app is more compelling, that market will increase even more for us. I get a lot of catering business from Google, and then I do get some individual orders from Google. And what also happens is when the Google folks finally do go home, they're often my customers in the evening and on the weekends.
Who else in the pizza industry is working on robots? Yeah, you can't be the only ones.
Well, I'd say Domino's is probably the technology leader in this space, and they've done lots of interesting things, especially in Australia. But what I would say is that what Zoom is doing is fundamentally different, because we're using automation to be actually to be able to deliver healthier food. So we're not just robots for robots' sake, or robots because they're sexy. I mean, the only reason why we're doing it this way is because we want to be able to scale, and because we want to be able to spend more money on higher quality ingredients, and you've got to get the margin from somewhere. So the automation creates a model that allows us to invest more in high quality food. And that's not something that you're seeing a lot of other food companies do. Not yet, anyway. I imagine that that's what's coming next.
I believe it is. This podcast, of course, is about food technology, and I write a lot about food technology. And I personally categorize all food technology into one bucket or another. In one bucket, which is the traditional industrial revolution technology process for food, you actually make the food worse to make it a better product.
That's right. That's right.
And then the other bucket, the newer bucket, is where you use technology to make the food actually better.
Amen, Mike. That's exactly it. You know, we've seen this happen in the past where technology's been applied in the food space. And I when I looked at what was happening in the 1940s and 50s is you saw a lot of chemistry. A lot of chemistry that sort of made food sturdier, whiter, easier to sit on a shelf for a long, long time. But it made people very sick. And I think now that we realize the impact of that kind of chemistry, the importance is to get back to our roots. But here's the problem. The folks at the top of the pyramid can afford to spend half a day in a farmer's market and then come home and turn on Michael Pollan's latest documentary and bake fresh bread. And I do that, and it's lovely. But that's not reality. That's not life for many people in our country. And so the importance is being able to deliver wholesome food to everyone. And the automation is allowing us to do that.
Speaking of delivering wholesome food to everyone, what are your expansion plans? Right now, you're in and around Mountain View. What are your plans for the future?
So with this facility, we're aggressively expanding our delivery radius now that our trucks are online. So our Mountain View customers can call their friends in Palo Alto and Los Gatos and tell them to order pizza. That'll happen in the next couple of weeks. I'm also excited to announce that our next Zoom facility is going to be opening in San Jose. We'll be able to complete construction on that location by December of this year, but it's likely that we'll spend a couple of months testing it and get that facility open in February. I'd love to get it open in time for International Pizza Day, which happens to be on February 9th. So we already have one location open in the Bay Area, a second location that's under construction, and then we're looking at five more locations in the next 12 months, and then we'll complete our Bay Area expansion with 11 locations in the next 24 months. After that, we're going to look at the next metro and then the next. Of course, you know our ambition is to be not only a national pizza company, but an international pizza company. I'm hoping for an early IPO for Zoom. I'd love to be able to get to scale that way, as opposed to looking at any kind of a franchise model.
Okay. So I wanted to ask a little bit about you. What is your background and how does one end up in the robotic pizza business?
Well, I mean, in the first place, I'm a huge nerd, and I always have been. The way that I've kind of been able to connect with people over my lifetime has really been through food. I was a pretty shy kid, but I was the kind of kid that would invite you over to bake cookies or share half of my sandwich. I've always felt more at home in the kitchen and at my own dining table than in other places in the world. I went off to study biomedical engineering when I was 18. I went to Harvard. And then moved to New York City to be in professional services. But I knew the entire time that I was going to eventually get into the food business. I just wasn't sure how, Mike. I wasn't really sure how to do it. I didn't grow up in a restaurant family, you know. But I realized in my sort of like mid-20s that I was either going to spend my life doing what other people thought I should do, or I could spend my life doing what I wanted to do. And so I sort of hedged my bet. I came back to California, went to Stanford Business School. But that was the point when I just completely rebranded myself. And food went from being a hobby and a passion to actually my career. My first shot in the business was to work for Danny Meyer on Shake Shack. Danny has been the most fantastic mentor that I could have ever imagined. And he is everything that everyone admires him to be. He truly lives his values. After I left Danny, the only reason I left Danny was because I wanted to start my own business. I'm a better boss than an employee, and so I started a food business called MexiQ in New York City. I bootstrapped it off of my credit card with two of my best friends and started as a food truck, and that's now a multi-unit fast casual business in New York City. MexiQ is Mexican and barbecue. That was with two great friends, and that business is still growing. I worked on a brand called Murray's Cheese, which is a cheese company in New York that brokered a deal with Kroger supermarkets. And as part of that deal, we built out the gourmet cheese section for supermarkets like Kroger, QFC, Albertsons, Ralph's, Harris Teeter, Fred Meyer. That opportunity gave me exposure to how people eat not only in San Francisco and Cambridge and New York, but in Alabama and Atlanta and everywhere in the middle. And then I went up to Harlem in New York to take over two restaurants called The Cecil and Minton's. And the year that I took over The Cecil, it had just opened the restaurant. It wasn't doing very well. But I took it over and we won Best New Restaurant in America. Josh Ozersky was the one who gave us that award. And so that was my career, and I was really doing well, and I was loving New York City. I had, just gotten a new apartment. But the very first time that I was introduced to Alex Garden, my co-founder, I realized that I was either going to sit in New York City and watch him and make a big attempt to disrupt this industry, or I was going to move to California and do it with him. And I did the latter, and it was the best decision I've ever made.
I would imagine it would be difficult for a New Yorker to live in the cultural wasteland that is Silicon Valley.
You know what's so funny is when I got out here, Mike, I couldn't figure out what to wear, which is a funny conundrum. Right. I couldn't understand that you could wear a hooded sweatshirt and jeans to a business meeting on Sand Hill Road. My mind was boggled. And so I sort of came to work in these lovely Diane von Furstenberg wrap dresses. And then at a certain point, I just gave in.
I actually lived in New York too, as well. And I moved back to California. I lived in New York for only a decade after growing up in California. And I got a job with a startup and I showed up wearing a suit. And of course, you know, when I lived in New York, that was in the '90s, everybody wore suits. And the entrepreneur who had hired me, looked me up and down. And he said, "What are you wearing a suit for?" And I said, "Well, you know, this is kind of like an interview type of, you know, beginning." And he's like, "Let me tell you something. This is Silicon Valley. I only have one suit, and it's a tuxedo for accepting awards."
That's right. So, I mean, that's exactly right. So you know where I'm coming from. I mean, frankly, I work so much that I hardly have time to miss my social life. But, you know, yeah. I think this is an exciting time to be in this place. I do wish that there was a more vibrant restaurant scene in Mountain View. And I wish that there was a place where I could go, you know, smoke a cigar and have a nice glass of whiskey and a chance of like running into, you know, some actor. But, you know, but that was a different time in my life. I guess maybe I'll have something like that in the future. For now, I'm all in on this. So
actually, there is a place. There's a place in Palo Alto called Bodeguita del Medio, where you can smoke a cigar. Yes, there is.
What's it called?
Don't tell anyone.
Okay.
It's called La Bodeguita del Medio. It's in Palo Alto.
Bodeguita del Medio. Okay, great.
They have a semi-quasi sort of kind of legal cigar smoking room in the back with a humidor, and you can absolutely do that.
Oh my gosh. Sort of kind of legal is my favorite kind of legal.
And it's a fantastic Cuban restaurant as well. I think a lot of people who have heard of Zoom Pizza kind of see you as a brand new company, but already you've overcome so many hurdles, regulatory-wise, technology-wise. And so I want to congratulate you for all of the successes and hurdles that you've overcome, the successes you've had, and everything you've accomplished so far. And I want to wish you enormous luck in the future. I can't wait till you expand throughout Silicon Valley so that I can order your pizza. Julia Collins, thank you so much for coming on the FatCast.
Mike, thanks so much.
I'd love to hear from you. Email your ideas and feedback to mike@elgin.com. And thanks for listening to my weekly food and technology podcast. Don't forget to share it with your friends. My name is Mike Elgin. There goes the FatCast.